Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey guys, it's Watt Harris here with another Panther Rants podcast. We got 2 days till game day. I know you're pumped. Personally, I wish the game was being played now. I just want to watch this damn game. Right? The game's 8 o'clock on Saturday, 7 Central Time. For my own selfish reasons, I wish this game was a noon game because my kids wake up around 8. By the time everything's all said and done, college football begins at 11, and I'm all set. But we all have time preferences, and some of y'all don't have kids, or even if you have kids, maybe you just prefer the night game. Say, hey, you know, I got all this crap I got to do anyway during the day. Night game's fine, and I can dig that. Now, as far as the game goes, you know, Pitt has this game. They got Georgia Tech next week, and that's what's crazy with this non-conference schedule is. It's like spread out. After this game, they don't got like their next non-conference opponent is for another few weeks, I believe. Maybe 1 or 2 weeks. So it's kind of hard to tell how what we can say about Pitt. I know this game itself will tell us how Pitt's going to be, because you know that's how it always is with Pitt on their non-conference schedules, where they have a marquee game, and if they don't win it, then it tells us how it's going to be. But in Pitt's case, they got a whole bunch of teams to play non-conference. So, one game isn't a litmus test. It's a whole bunch of them. But for this one itself, it's early litmus test because we have to figure out what we have at the moment. And this is a big game for Pitt, for obvious reasons. It's bragging rights. If anything else, it really is, it's bragging rights, because it doesn't matter if we beat them. They're the bigger program, and they're always going to get the players. That happens. That's just part of life. But we'll learn more about how the team's going to be, and I'm not so sure about the ACC yet. I mean, we got Georgia Tech after this, but it just depends on the beating itself. If we beat Penn State, how bad? If we come out and we kick the crap out of Penn State, we may start to say, hey, you know what? Maybe we may be a serious contender for the Coastal. And that's really what we should start at right now, is the Coastal. Because let's not try to get ahead of ourselves with the ACC title or college football playoff in general, because we got to take baby steps and figure out what is it. But we'll learn more about this team, because Albany doesn't really won't tell us a whole lot. This game will. As far as Penn State, you know, we got to see a whole bunch of them from Appalachian State, and obviously there's a lot of keys here. For one thing, Pitt's gonna have its work cut out for them, especially on defense, because you got McSorley, you got Tompkins, you got Johnson. Miles Sanders, that Slade kid. Penn State's offense looks like it hasn't missed a beat. But one thing I've noticed about them is their play calling is still a little iffy for me, because they couldn't put away Appalachian State at the end. And what I've noticed about their a lot of their drives that stalled is they start out with a run and then they throw two passes. I mean, they love using McSorley, and that's the thing. Is what killed them in some of their losses last year, and especially that Rose Bowl, is they had Saquon Barkley in their back pocket, but they were still trying to throw the ball with McSorley. And he is a really good quarterback, obviously. But sometimes quarterbacks have their dry spells during games, and they miss a bunch of passes. And sometimes you got to go to your running game. And a lot of those games, they weren't doing that. You know, play calling. It seemed play calling was their worst enemy. But yeah, they had a hard time with knocking out Appalachian State. And defensively, they gave up a bunch of yards, over 400 yards total. The quarterback himself, I'm sure Pitt watched this game. The quarterback for Appalachian State is, you know, he had a big game. He's very similar to Pitt's own Kenny Pickett. He's a dual, you know, Pickett's a dual threat. You can run with Pickett, and you can throw with him. So, if this guy from Appalachian State gave Penn State's defense some fits, obviously, Kenny Pickett's going to do the same. Pitt's going to need some work out of their ground game, but I'm sure it'll get that. We'll know more about the offensive line as well, because they're going to go against a better opponent. We're going to see if Dave Borbély, you know, was an upgrade from our last offensive line coach, Peterson. I believe was his name. So we get to see if that's an upgrade. Defensively as well, we need to see if what we have. You know, if we've upgraded from Josh Conklin. And if we're doing, you know, if we made any improvements with the coaching staff adds. So, we'll know a lot about what we've done, what we have, and whatnot. But obviously, Pitt needs to keep McSorley in check. They got to keep him in the pocket. They got to pressure him enough. And for one thing, defense got to cover, because they got good receivers. And I mean, it looks like their ground game hasn't really missed a beat either. So, I mean, obviously they don't have Saquon Barkley anymore, but they have two decent backs. I mean, Miles Sanders, obviously, there's a reason why our staff was, you know, camping out his house, supposedly, trying to get him to switch his commitment to Pitt. Obviously, they really liked them, and who knows? And let's not forget, it's Appalachian State as well. They're obviously not, you know, big money. So we could say that the big day that Sanders had, maybe fool's gold, but we'll know more of that when this game comes on. And obviously Pitt's going to do some things. They're obviously going to utilize their athletes as well. Maurice French, obviously one of them. Because if you watch last year's game against Penn State didn't flat out totally dominate Pitt. Pitt dominated for time possession for a lot of the game. and they were moving a ball against Penn State. The problem is Pitt didn't have a good quarterback. Not to mention they spotted him, you know, points early. You know, Max Brown spotted him an early interception, so a lot of stuff that happened to Pitt was self-inflicted. And it's just, we, you know, receivers weren't catching, quarterbacks weren't throwing. It was a combination of a lot of things. But Pitt somehow moved the ball against them. And then finally, Penn State woke up and realized that they had to actually get the ball to their playmaker, Barkley. And they were able to put us away. But the only missing from Pitt was quarterback play. That was it in that game. So, you know, we lost 33-14, but the score wasn't really as bad as it seemed. Pitt actually competed. It just, they couldn't score points. So, anyways, guys, as far as my prediction goes, I like Pitt. I think I like Pitt in a close one. If I'm going Penn State, it's going to be because Pitt starts off disastrously and everything just goes wrong, like, you know, like a lot of Pitt games do. But I like Pitt in this one. I think, you know, it's going to be at home. It's night, and I think Narduzzi wants these guys to really show up. And I think they want to do the same as well. So, look at the rest of the games for this week. Other than that, there's really not much else out there. You have USC and Stanford. I like Stanford at home. USC's obviously replacing some players, especially Sam Darnold. I think Stanford takes that one. Michigan State and Arizona State plays that night as well, and this is an intriguing game because Arizona State, you know, is coached by Herm Edwards, and he did some crazy things in the offseason, but they came out rolling last week, and of course he's using Todd Graham's players. Let's not forget that. But he's got Michigan State, and you know, Michigan State had a little, I believe last week had a scare, I think. I'll have to double check that. Well, you know what? I'm driving, I'm podcasting, so forget it. If I'm wrong, screw it. But obviously, your sexy pick is Michigan State, but I don't know. Something tells me Arizona State may pull this one off. And if they do, the Herm Edwards train's going to take a big chug. Because you know how people are about this stuff. They love it. And they can't get enough of it. Oh, yeah, that's right. Michigan State had Utah State last week. I believe that's the home of Scott Barnes. But Utah State's will always give you a scare. I don't know. Maybe I'm being too overly optimistic about Herm Edwards. I don't know. At Arizona State may give him a fight. But yeah, if he pulls this one off, people are going to be all over Herm Edwards. Definitely. But as far as the rest of the schedule goes, there's not really much else there as far as the games go. You know, but that's basically your three marquee games this weekend. You know, unless there's more. Now, around the ACC, there's a bunch. You got Duke and Northwestern. Duke beat the crap out of Army. I was surprised. I thought Army would give him a game, but I was wrong. Maybe I'm wrong about Duke. But again, I don't get paid to do this stuff, so I'm just here doing it for fun. They got Northwestern. That should be actually a good game. Because those two love to give people problems. Georgia Tech and South Florida. South Florida had a decent season last year, as we all remember. They took Central Florida to the helm last year. And obviously they're coached by Charlie Strong. So we get to know a little bit more about Georgia Tech in this game as well. Last year they were 5-7. They competed. You know, Tech is always going to get people. Georgia Tech's going to always get people problems because that's how they are. With that little option game they do, they love to run. They'll run the hell out of you. So tick 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 tick. Can you hear me ticking? All right. So going through the rest of these games here for the ACC. Towson and Wake Forest. Wake should take that one. NC State and Georgia State. NC State, obviously. Boston College, Holy Cross. No-brainer, Boston College. North Carolina, East Carolina. No, North Carolina lost to Cal last week, but I think they'll take this game. Obviously, this is a must-win for North Carolina and for Dora, because if he loses this one, people are going to be really pissed off in Chapel Hill. Wagner and Syracuse, easy win. Miami, Savannah State, Miami, obviously. Louisville and Indiana State, obviously. Indiana, I mean, shit, I'm sorry, Louisville, obviously. Sanford, FSU. Now, two more intriguing games here from the ACC. You got Indiana and Virginia. Indiana's no slouch. I mean, they're not the Indiana we used to know where they were an easy win because they were known more for their basketball than anything else. Virginia obviously is up and coming, and although people overrated the hell out of them last year. Game's Indiana, but Indiana's not really a hostile place to play. It's Indiana. So I'll go with Virginia in that one. Clemson and Texas A&M. Now, the thing about Texas A&M, I mean, I've lived here in Houston probably 9 years now. Ever since the Johnny Football thing, A&M's kind of like the Virginia Tech of the Southwest. The reason I say it is because they usually come out swinging. Then when the schedule gets tougher, they get their asses beat, and of course, they've been overrated. So this is an intriguing game, but so far, but Jimbo's the coach, and I think he still has his work cut out for him yet. I think they'll compete against Clemson, but Clemson wins. Jimbo obviously has to fix a lot of things from the Sumlin era. I mean, someone was a horribly bad coach. It's just that he ran out of time there at A&M. And I guess when he started losing some, he was still doing, the same stuff was happening. Where, for him, they were just losing these what-the-hell games, and their defense just wasn't there. They would just, the team would just start out kicking and towards the end, they would just fall apart. So, I think he still has his work cut out for him, so I like Clemson. So, that finishes up, the Pitt-Penn State and the rest of your weekend. So, as we finish up here, obviously there's some other stuff going on. Le'Veon Bell didn't report to camp. Not the camp, I'm sorry, practice still, and I'm supposedly he's not going to play in the first game. And, the players obviously are not happy and are speaking up about it. Just hearing this stuff from the players themselves, to me, the whole thing, the whole situation seems toxic in that locker room. You know, we tend to, you know, it's just for players to talk like that about a teammate. For me, it's just, it's baffling. Because I remember when Jerome Bettis, after his first season in Pittsburgh, when he had a big year, he took his offensive line to Rooster Chris Steakhouse, I believe, and spent 20, and the bill was over 20 grand, I believe was how much it was. I mean, those guys ate a lot of food. Yeah, he took them out to dinner. But then you got guys who are offensive linemen for Le'Veon Bell, and they're just trashing him during this contract situation. It's just odd. I mean, to me, it just seems like the whole locker room thing is toxic. And maybe there are some players that are toxic, and I don't know. It's weird. To me, the whole Le'Veon Bell thing is between Le'Veon Bell and Steelers ownership. Really, that's all this is. It's between him and his employer. And obviously, he wants to get paid, and Steelers have paid him, but he wants more, and he feels he's entitled to it. And that's just how it is. And Steelers, it's just, they're disagreeing on this stuff. They don't agree, and they're not going to come to a table to, you know, patch it up. So this is what you have, and they're going to have to move on without him. And I think really if I'm a player, that's how I'm treating this. It's between him and management. I'm not to even talk about it, because now I'm sure he's reading his headlines up, you know, by his teammates, and it just creates a bad situation for all involved. But anyways, guys, I've hit the 22-minute mark, and I really don't have much else to talk about. That's, you know, really all I can say about the whole Le'Veon Bell thing. I mean, there's not much else. I could talk about some other things. Obviously, the whole media this week with the Penn State stuff. Obviously, Narduzzi didn't lock the gates on the media, which is good, because we don't get to hear the media bitch about, you know, oh, he locked us out again, I can't stand him, oh, I hate him. Well, he opened the gates. And of course, there's some people that got problems with what stuff he had to say. And obviously, he talked about Albany, and some Penn State person, Corey Geiger, said, oh, he disrespected Albany because he said it's hard to get up for them. Well, yeah, it's a freaking 1A school. It's hard for any team to get revved up to play 1A school. You know, it's not that exciting. And then on top of that, I guess he talked about some of the Penn State players. And, of course, he made some comment about not seeing Lamont way out there as much. He's not really been out there. Well, yeah, it's his second season. He hasn't really seen him play, but he's seen, I mean, big A props to all the other guys that he recruited. But, of course, you know, the media has a narrative, and then they say he's throwing shade at a sophomore. I kind of love that. Gotta love narratives and storylines. It's just dumb. I mean, It's basically been a pissing match on who coaches more class here. And yeah, Narduzzi's done his share of stuff on Twitter and all kind of, I mean, his kind of side comments. He's done it. So is Franklin. You could say Franklin's a little bit more, I guess, sounded more diplomatic about it. Where he, you know, he looks like a nice guy after he makes his comments. Whereas Pat is obviously the rugged guy from Youngstown. So if he makes it, it's being a tough guy. But yeah, anyways, guys, I'll let you have your day back. Hell to pit. Bye.